Welcome in, kingly brothers and heroic husbands from around the planet. Welcome to this new episode of the Be the Husband She Brags About podcast. This is the one podcast where everything we do, we say, we express aims to support you become the marriage transforming hero of your relationship. In today's episode, I'm speaking to how marriage can become a lonely dogfight without brotherly love and support. In the modern world, it's been really bastardized, this idea of men having a deep need for love and support outside of themselves. Unapologetically, you have heard me crank it up recently, and I am consciously treading it into the culture that we are individually and collectively creating here at the Be the Husband She Brags About podcast and world movement, that lone wolfing, there's no badge of honor in lone wolfing. When you're experiencing inner, outer struggle, inner world and an outer struggle in your marriage is the topic here, or in any endeavor in your life. This life is so beautiful and so sacred that to suffer, struggle and feel subconsciously that there's a badge of honor in lone wolfing, and it's like, I'll grind it out, I'll make it there, and yet the needle doesn't move. In this culture, we're saying, hey, screw that. There's no honor in that. I've spoken to it before. It's like, I get why lone wolfing makes sense. The upbringing of every single one of us individually, it makes sense because there weren't trustworthy men, there weren't loving, supportive men, etc., etc. So it made sense from a childhood perspective to go, hey, screw this. Like, men on the outside, people on the outside, they put me down, so I'll do it by myself. Although it makes sense from a childhood perspective, it does not support you or any man reach the next level. And one of the great tragedies of this is the depth of loneliness that husbands are experiencing in marriage and in life. Men, by extension, whether defined by, you know, marriage, relationship, engagement as husbands or not, men en masse are feeling really lonely. It's not an emotional state that many men would sort of speak to at or have at the forefront of their mind. In actual fact, the vast majority of us, if you speak about myself, you know, a few years back, lonely? No way. You know, there was people I spoke to. I spoke to dudes at jiu-jitsu, men in my work, you know, there's people around, there's old college buddies, etc. I wasn't lonely. Yet, what I'm talking about is a loneliness of deeply meaningful, profound connection, where the depth of your human existence and experience is welcome and safe to be expressed, to be spoken about, to know that you will be seen, heard, and safe, and you can express in equal measure, you know, the depths of challenges that you're facing, but also the type of brotherly love and support where, man, it's good that your highest achievements and your celebrations are welcomed just as much, and are there's a safe space provided just as much for your celebrations to be unapologetically seen and heard and acknowledged and celebrated just as much as the challenges, because it's the whole repertoire of the human experience that we have this need. We do have a deep need for love and support. And yet, the literal vast majority, I'd say 99% plus, are missing this nourishment of genuine deep connection from other men. Very often, what ends up happening is like a boyish need. The love and support, because it's not culture, it's where we've been culturally conditioned to seek, you know, the great source of love is, you know, for the man is the woman, for the woman is the man. And I know there's all beautiful, many, many different sexual preferences between gender and all different genders thing, but like, you know, like the age old thing, man, with woman, woman with man, etc., etc., and like between human and human, that you seek the great romantic search and longing for love is that loving union with somebody outside of yourself. All these classic romantic movies, great love stories, you know, the it's all this outlandish, exaggerated, pointed story and narrative that like the great love stories are, you know, the undying love for somebody else and that love shared, and that is really beautiful. I am not going to say that that is not beautiful, but within the conditioning that it's all about, oh, the, you know, the incredible love for the other woman, and yeah, I'm actually listening to so many of the songs on quite often now. I'm doing the stables, mucking out, helping out with the 8 horses that we have with my wife and our both our daughters, but our eldest daughter Anya, she always has her Spotify playlist on, and she's 13, and like, hey, the love game is biting in at her nervous system, and so she's listening to tons of quite feminine oriented love songs, but there's some badass guys in there, and it's this longing and the celebration of this outer love, this other person, the yearning, the depth of anguish that comes at the breakup from this source of external love, and the depths of ecstasy that comes to our human experience when we have this type of love. So it's cool. It is a part of the human experience. It's a beautiful part of the human experience. But we're talking about conscious masculinity and high-end spiritual practice here. And when I say high-end spiritual practice, guys, you don't have to have like a black outfit on you with a little white collar and have spent 7 years in the Vatican to do high spiritual practice, or you know, have spent 7 years in Tibet or whatever the hell. It's like, it's really, I find that the uprising of consciousness on this planet, like never before, it is in the hands of regular dudes like yourself and myself. You know, when I speak in every episode, better husbands today, better world tomorrow, I'm really speaking to a future that you and I, individually and collectively, we have the absolute power to welcome into the reality of our houses, our homes, our hearts, first and foremost. And from there, you know, spread over the world. There's literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of us individually and collectively. Coming from a deeper love, a deeper authenticity, a deeper devotional love for our wives, for our marriage, for unleashing and unlocking our authentic truth and our love that has remained captured and imprisoned by the bullshit story of society, etc., etc. So when I point to spiritual practice, I'm really talking to the depths of how infinitely powerful you are as a man, as powerful as any man that has ever been before is alive today and ever will be in future. That is how powerful you are. When we come from there, that's what I'm talking about, spiritual practice. You have every right to come from that position and that perspective today, in the middle of all your imperfections that I have, you have, we all have. But the boyish neediness I would talk about, there's a boyish perspective and then there's a kingly perspective. The boyish, needy perspective is like the only source of love is your wife, is your partner. And it breeds this, you know, you'd hear this sort of bandied about unconsciously, you know, in humor, you know, guys having a couple of beers and it's like, oh, you know, like, man, can't live with her, can't live without her, huh? Ha 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 ha, give me another beer. It's like, I've done it. I'm not like like if I'm mocking you, I'm mocking me for years. And in a way, you know, screw it. We should maybe not mock the part of us, but it's like it's profoundly mediocre, as a perspective. No matter how all pervasive it is, something being all pervasive doesn't mean it's right or acceptable. You know, natural, it's not. Common, yes. Common means it shows up very regularly. Natural, no. The natural impulse is that there's a profound and ferocious love and acceptance of yourself. You know, I would say the kingly perspective is love and acceptance of yourself. You know, where you connect in nature and solitude with your higher self and your creator, that actually in the deepest touching base and connecting with love and the source of love from the kingly perspective is where your nervous system through spiritual practice, solitude, time in nature, you connect with your higher self and you connect with your creator, with God, with the universe, with Buddha nature. You put in the name that expresses that infinite potentiality of the universe in terms that your mind is in alignment with. That's the kingly perspective. You know, you go into nature, all the indigenous cultures had this profound relationship with nature. Men would go into nature and they were in tune with the animals, with the plants, with the seasons, with the rivers, with the lakes, with the mountains. It was a profound spiritual practice to commune with nature. There was sources of inspiration and love that filled up the jug of contentment, of resilience, of reserve, of love, of beauty, of grace that these men would experience on a daily basis. Outside, if you want to say the octagon of their marriage, outside of the container of their marriage, they would be filling their soul and the inspiration of their minds elsewhere. That's kingly, where that boyish neediness is like, oh, the only source of love is my wife, is my woman, and it's like, can't live with her, can't live without her, you know, love hate, oh, it's a love hate thing, isn't it? And what that speaks to is like these old wounds that we have, where because of growing up in a profoundly sick society, we end up relating with our women through the eyes of the 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8-year-old boy in us. You can fight against this reality as much as you want, but if you line up, you know, 1,000 deep ends coaches, 1,000 psychotherapists, 1,000 counselors, 1,000, they'll all say the same thing. You know, Buddhist masters, etc. They will all be like, yeah, hey, you learn all these beliefs in childhood. The main belief systems are set down by the age of like, what, 8, 9. There's a little bit of argument about when the thing is. There can be secondary trauma thereafter, of course, but your worldview is shaped by the age of 8 or 9. And you bring all of those belief systems from childhood, from millions of imprints of different deep emotional experiences, both positive and, if you want to call them, negative. The good, the bad, the ugly has been laid down in your nervous system. So you bring all of that shit to marriage. All the good stuff, all the not so good stuff. And you start churning out the emotional set point of what you have inherited from your childhood. That's why the boyish neediness comes when we end up putting infinitely too much responsibility for us to feel in love with ourselves, for us to feel good, on our wives. And touch base with yourself. Have you, over the course of your marriage thus far, noticed that there's a bloody good amount of times when, if you're really honest, in the background of your mind, maybe it bubbles out in some of you actually quite aggressively against her and expressed external verbal judgment and attack, but definitely for the vast majority of guys, you know, that I've spoken with, and in my own mind for sure, a lot of background resentment, a lot of sort of repulsion, a lot of judgment that, Jesus, she gives you so much shit, and like the amount of like what she should and shouldn't do, and blaming her and shaming her. And then, of course, there's shaming yourself. But there's this resentment for the amount of times that she rejects you. You know, when you try to initiate making love, when you kiss her and she blocks off, or she's just constantly criticizing you, she doesn't witness, you know, the good stuff that you do around the house and with the kids, and you do infinitely more than your dad that went before you, etc., etc., but nothing is ever good enough for her. put the hands up energetically, guys. Does any of that ring home as being like a truth for you, where there's like this resentful, even sometimes vengeful part of you that's like, oh, you know, it's like you'd be just as good without her. You know, like if you didn't have kids in the house and this, all this, like the whole awkwardness of the practicality of breaking up, man, you like there's bound to be somebody else out there that would be easier. 99.9% of guys, but like, yeah, that does be there. That does be there. It is like if there was a neurophysiological marker and some way of like, you know, as you thought, it was just typed out and stored in front of you. It would be really, really revealing what would be typed out, would it not? Fuck yeah. 1,000 guys in the room. If the dude is there saying, no, there'd be nothing, no shady shit comes through my nervous system. It's like, it's all peace and all love. I'm just a loving being. I've been in the presence of those guys. In the presence of those guys, I have seen shadow. Now, I have this shadow where it's all love and light. I have been in the presence of some guys that after certain conversations, coaching conversations, they don't tend to stay with men's work. They don't tend to want more than one coaching conversation. Because why? What I have seen is the guys that have zero shadow, they're love and light, they're great spiritual practitioners. I have seen some of them assassinate the character of their ex-wives who, you know, different times, quite often I've seen that their wives, you know, when they met them, their wives were relatively fine, but the wounds and that of their wives, the wives just started dumping so much shit that they ended up being so mentally out of their head. I have three deeply specific case study examples of guys that I have met me there. There again, they didn't want more than one conversation because, hey, where my questioning and the coaching was what it was revealing, they felt it easier to just hide behind, she went batshit crazy. And poor me, what I had to do because I am such a spiritually clean person. There's a profoundly, profoundly dangerous persona out there. So what I'm saying is, if you don't have a shadow, if you think, oh no, I'm just love and light and I'm listening in here just to figure out how to unfuck my wife. Wrong podcast, dude. The work here is unfucking our own nervous system. From, not that we're at fault, as always, we're profoundly okay. You're amazing, an amazing human being, just as you are. But there's been a lot of stuff that we had to set down in our nervous systems that blocks us off from love. So again, it's that boyish neediness that we source the love from childhood on our mothers. And so often we didn't get the type of adoration, the type of safe love, and our mothers didn't know how to hold space for our full radical masculine authentic expression, nowhere near it. And so often we didn't have our dads present enough. They might have been physically present, but psychologically and emotionally they weren't available. So we tended to go to dampen our masculine side. A lot of our expression wasn't allowed. And thus we came into marriage with deep, deep boyhood wounds of a bias towards feeling rejection, a bias towards feeling vengeful, a bias towards feeling upset, a bias to feeling abandoned by our wives, etc., etc., etc. That just makes you human. Now, all of this points to something that's definitely necessary if you are to become the marriage transforming force of your relationship. That's the whole culture here, and it's a pretty high bar, and unapologetically so, because there's this principle I really like. It's like, I don't know who the author is that coined it, but it's brilliant. 99% is a bitch, 100% is a breeze. The masculine soul in you, that part of your nervous system that's like, oh, rational. You know, it's like, oh, I'm so rational minded. Okay, well, if you're rational minded and you find something does not work and something does work, well then, if you truly want to self-define yourself and be in integrity with that self-definition of I'm a rational thinking being, I have a powerful rational side. Well, when you see something that works, you go 100% behind it. And 99% is a bitch means if you sort of semi go at it, 99% is a bitch because that 1% of the boy part in you will kick and scream and rebel against a new powerful idea that pretends to snuggle in and pretends to be is like, oh, this new idea. Is he saying that my old way is wrong? He's saying I'm wrong. The boy energy in us thinks everything is a slight against its personhood. Who the fuck is this Mark guy? Who does he think he is? Like, cool. Like, it's cool. But, like, you're dealing with a five-year-old. The five-year-old, pardon me. I hated feedback. I detested feedback in my early days in men's work. I needed that feedback. But my nervous system was kicking and screaming because, hey, I just learned in childhood. Any bit of feedback was sort of put-downs on me. It actually explicitly was. It was, like, shaming and was laughing at my expression, my authenticity. So there was a boyish part in me that I had to have ironed out. I still, when I get, like, on a weekly basis with my men's group, when I get, like, feedback that really rattles, it's like, oh, I can feel a sting of resistance. It's that boyish energy. So where all of this goes to is the new paradigm that I would suggest we all need to come from as men is realize that we don't project our deep human need to fill up on love as an external journey exclusively. Yes, our beautiful queens can be an amazing source of, like, feeling full on life, of aliveness, you know, when she's in her fullest feminine being and she's moving and she's unapologetically dancing in life and singing and just the fullness of all fullness, which is the divine feminine unleashed. It's amazing. It's deeply inspiring. However, you'll find if you have been coming from that sort of boyish meet all your needs from your woman, it's like, oh, marriage should, I'm entitled to that love. I'm entitled to that on tap. She should just love me as I am, and she should just inspire me, and she should just be open sexually, and she should, all these shoulds. You'll find that she will not unleash her full feminine, unapologetic, open-hearted dance and movement and song and, like, just all this amazingly attractive feminine energy. So it makes sense. I know myself, when I started going to men's groups, slowly but surely, but also way quicker than I ever would have imagined was possible, I started filling up my cup of love and acceptance. And it's like my nervous system, separate from the container of my marriage, I was feeling loved and accepted. And yeah, there was challenge there. Hell yeah, that was a beautiful part. But it's like I was getting all this love and support, and I was beginning to feel way more grounded in myself. And in time, it was like, wow, I'm way more grounded in myself. Like when my queen would, hey, there was a lot of momentum, years and years and years of deep dysfunctional relating together. And she has horror childhood shit as well, of course. I started noticing, and the nervous system of my wife started noticing. It's like, oh, Mark, you're just, I was way more grounded. I was not taking, you know, horror triggering shit that, hey, she had learned to dance, like, oh, that triggers him. You know, like, if she felt threatened by something I had said or by whatever the situation was, she would fire out a couple of things subconsciously. She's way more aware of it now, but it's like, hey, like she was doing that dance like we had done for years, spark up a row, etc., etc., bring distance, and you don't feel the pangs of hurt and rejection when you're arguing with each other. Hence, we so often jump into all the drama of it. I wasn't taking it personal, because why? With brotherly love and support, I was like, I'm good. I'm grounded. I'm feeling more accepted. I don't have to take this personal. And I started feeling more grounded and more objective, and I could actually listen better. And the drama, instead of being like for, I was about to say 3 or 4 hours, sometimes it's 3 or 4 days or even 3 or 4 weeks if like the drama was bad enough. Really, really dramatic drama. I keep having to remind myself and remind you guys, because things are that good in my marriage now. And that's not to brag, as one coaching mentor of mine mentions frequently, is like, it's not bragging if you've done it. I remind myself and you guys, first of all, that it's that good now, because it just was that bad. It was that bad. And it's just really that transformation is possible. If it's possible for this ignorant old sea dog, how brutally ignorant I was, it's possible for all of you. But it's the perspective and the source that you come from. The wife is your only source. What happens with brotherhood is, as I say, it's like that nervous system gets really grounded. Now, of course, and I put it out there, like heroic husbands, men's circles, ultra profound, world class. I'm pitching it that it's like you won't find another place equal to it on the planet if you're a husband desiring to become the marriage transforming hero of your relationship. It's like impeccable, that space. So the levels of love and acceptance in there is off the charts. At the time of recording, there's like we've collectively experienced the second week of the first group and the first session of the second group of Heroic Husbands Men's Circles is getting going this week, and there's going to be more. But it's just off the charts. It's amazing the amount of love and support and outpouring from regular dudes just like you, just like myself first, that they just come. And when they know it's safe, it's like this outpouring of love and support and challenge and guys going at it. And like within a week, massive marriage breakthroughs happening. It's amazing because of that brotherly support. But you don't have to wait around. And like I'm going to set a direct challenge to every single one of you to be a leader in your community. Every single one of you listening in, you've got a community of men, other married men, other men, like whether they're married or not, but probably a lot of you have quite a few that are married and that. You can accept that on face value, it's like a lot of guys are feeling lonely, a lot of guys are lacking nourishment, and hey, this takes courage. It's not leadership if it doesn't take courage. Because why? The leader leads. It's inherent. To be a leader, the word lead is in the word. Like by definition, you're leading somebody, your family, your community. A leader leads one or more people outside of themselves. By example is the best, like it's the only way of true leadership. But by example, by 10 out of 10 expression of courage, you lead them from what the individual in front of you or the collective tribe around you believes is possible or impossible. You lead them by embodying what is possible. And one of the most courageous things that you can gift your network of brothers around you is unapologetic expression of love and support for other men. I'm going to introduce a practice. I'm going to challenge you, encourage you, direct masculine challenge to give this a go. This is something you can do today. You can do it intermittently. What there was a few weeks ago. It was really beautiful. I think it was 9 messages, voice messages ranging from 3.5 minutes to 5 minutes. I went on my Saturday morning practice, which is my deep dive practice for just refining, reconnecting with myself. Again, that's spiritual practice when I say connection with my higher self, my creator. I do like a 3.5 hour deep dive on my Saturday mornings because my life is filling up. The podcast is going brilliant. The men's circles, there's a load of, like, my schedule is full Monday to Friday. It's actually becoming, I have to have a high-end practice. I have to get, like, the better you get, the better you better get type thing. As a teacher that I like says, Don Miller, it's like, the better you get, the better you better get. But that deep spiritual connection. And what I did was, I sent loving messages of support and explicit love for, it was ended up being 9 guys in just my wider community. Some guys had been a number of years that I'd connected in with them. Some guys were in the last couple of months. And I remember, guys, that morning, I wasn't feeling so inspired, actually. I was sluggish. I distinctly remember it's like I'd done meditation, I'd done a little bit of movement stuff and breath work, and I just still wasn't in the full flow of it. The amazing thing was, though, the first message took quite a bit of effort. It was like I just wasn't feeling it, and it was like, oh, here, I was like, my mind was questioning, will I do the practice, will I not? But I was like, I was committed. I was like, okay, I'm doing this practice. I got 30 seconds through the first one. It was like I was beginning to feel a flow, feeling really good. Picking one of the guys on my WhatsApp and Telegram and just voice messages. I prefer them. Like, you can communicate the tone in them. You can send a type message, of course, but I find just a voice message just allows that love and that genuine authenticity to come through, and the desire to connect. I love bomb these guys. It was like, got into my groove. Guys, after like two or three messages, I was storming. I was like, ooh, yeah. I was like, oh man, I love you. I acknowledge you. The gifts, like acknowledging him for the gifts he brings to me and to my life, and the gifts, his gifts in the world. And hey, it takes a skill. It takes a real attentiveness. You know, when you do this practice, you start, I started being amazed. Like, wow, I'm just wrapped up by, I have a community of guys that I have connected around me that they're deeply inspiring guys, but you gotta do a conscious practice like that to realize. I definitely was like, yeah, they're badass, and celebrating the badassery in the guys, you know, in front of me, and not literally, but like in the message, I was like, oh, feeling great. Then boom, next message, and I just got into this flow of love where my nervous system was like, just there was so much energy in my body. And what's beautiful about this is one of the greatest ways to sort of inspire your nervous system to higher phases and capacities to receive love and to gift love is by practicing it. And being generous, the word generous I love. I'm going to do a deep dive episode on that soon. The word generous, like, it's come from gene, gene. G-E-N-E, which is like the genes, the genetic coding, generate, generous. They're all coming from that, which is like to give birth. It's like the ancient derivative of it. Etymological root is to give birth to something in the world. So like when you practice generating love, not only are you gifting men in your network, in your tribe, this love and the support that they spontaneously get to receive and, you know, have this beautiful dance with you, but you're also practicing the generation of love within yourself in generously gifting it to somebody else and giving birth to it in the world. You're generating love and the practice and the vibration of love in your own nervous system, which, hey, you know, this can feel frightening and this can feel inhibited within our nervous systems. Again, we circle back, childhood wounds. You look at how kids in a playground, if you're dads or you've seen vicariously through other kids, it doesn't matter what the color, what the race, what the age, what the sex, what the gender, like, it does not matter. They're generating love all the time. We learned the inhibition of love along the way. This is a practice. It's like going, hey, I'm a leader. I set down that gauntlet to every single one of you. And this has profound implications for your marriage, by the way. Really profound implications. You become a leader for men in your community where you're like, you practice being generous with your love, with your offering of love and support to other men. Thus, you become a generator of love, of loving consciousness within yourself, within your own nervous system. Now you're pulsating that love and that support. That starts locking in and like, hey, that's the tune I play. As a result, and like, what's in this for you? You know, I send out those messages. Guys, I have to say, I've been doing this for a number of years. There was a background of vulnerability. It's like, I've done it before, but it's like, wow, just all of these messages, one after the other, and like some to guys that hadn't met so many times, and other guys that disconnected, like, you know, maybe 8 months previous or a year and a half, I met them in deep men's work, and it was this, there's my shadow part going, ah, you know, fearing rejection, fearing like, what the hell would they think of me and that. The only amazing thing was, I think at a count of three, of the nine guys, three of them sent back deeply profound messages, which was like the golden thread linking all the messages from these guys were, Mark, you can't realize how profoundly important receiving that message was today. It's like, I've just been, you know, through three of the toughest months of my adult life existence, and just receiving that message today was like, that was the medicine I needed. Like, I cannot, like, the timing was divine. Another guy, same thing, going through really profound, deep, challenging times, doing incredible work, but with like dependency issues previous. And like he said, he was like almost at the point of like throwing in a towel, as like all this hard work to overcome substance abuse. He was like, just true challenge. And it's like, that message came true. He was like, divinely timed. He's like, just that was enough. And he's going strong still. Become a leader embodying love in your brotherly community, and how that serves you and serves your wife and your kids in your sacred kingdom, in your sacred beautiful home, is your nervous system then, by leading your network of brothers, they start responding and relating to you as, hey, I can trust this dude. He's safe. He leads with his heart. He leads vulnerably. And some guys get a little bit, you know, judgmental in moments like that. But hey, man, if you're going to be a leader, the boy does what he wants and what he doesn't want. The leader in you, the king in you and the king in me, does what he needs to do. And leadership takes courage. Again, if there was total certainty about the result, it wouldn't be courage. You might get some kickback. Maybe some guys might get a little bit judgmental, because why? Their nervous systems just doesn't know how to receive that love. Some guys mightn't respond because maybe, hey, they don't know how to respond to that. That's okay. You're not doing this practice, guys, to get the world to love you back. Again, that would be boyish, needy. It's like, oh, I'm gifting this. I'm doing this high practice. The world should just love me. No, fuck that. That is not leadership. You do it as a spiritual practice. You're all in the practice. You're all out in the results. That's clean energy. But you will see that you go all in on this, man, love comes back to you. Because guys mightn't say it now, but the next time they get talking to you, it's like, hey, man, that was beautiful to receive. Some guys might even say, hey, that was really challenging, but like, hey, I really appreciated that you'd actually do it. You do it with that 10 out of 10 leader energy. It's like all in, and you're totally unattached to the results. Guys will feel you. Now, that fills your nervous system with unshakable love, so that you become a rock where your nervous system is just loving and is at home with self-love, is at home with full growing, expanding acceptance of yourself. And from there, with that energy of brotherly love pulsating in your nervous system, and you psychologically feeling that there's more and more guys, they've got your back, and then you keep doing that practice over the weeks and months and years ahead. Now you've got a full brotherhood, and you're not feeling so lonely, and you're feeling more full, and you're feeling more inspired, you're feeling more resilient. Community, the core of profound resilience as a human being, community is at the core of it. This practice done regularly, I'm committing, I'm going to do in another couple of months, I'm going to do it again myself. I had done it before, like single messages. This was the first time when I went like, just whoa, all in. Guys, it builds that resilience where you're like, I'm unfucking stoppable. Your nervous system is like, I can take on the world. When I have these men and I have this capacity to generate love en masse in my life's experience, and they love me and support me, and then from there I've got my source of love within, with brothers loving me, and hey, on top of that you get a bit of spiritual love in, and then from there it's much easier to be unfuckwithable in the face of your feminine challenging and testing of your embodied capacity to love her through everything she has to offer to you. It's the feminine shitstorm. It's the ultimate challenge of, are you able, do you have the capacity to love whore and love life with whatever it batters you with? Can you receive her love too as well? So guys, marriage is a lonely dogfight without brotherly love and support. Went into many different aspects of that, but I know this is a game changer. The challenge is to do the practice. Don't talk about it, don't listen in passively to go, hey, it mightn't be 9, might be 3 or 4. Screw it, if just sending your one best buddy where you're like, okay, I can do it with him. I challenge you to implement this with the 10 out of 10 courage that is available to you. But push the limits a bit. Expand beyond what your nervous system is comfortable for. That's the realm of courage. And when you keep repeatedly showing up like that, you will find, naturally, the end result of that is you become the marriage transforming hero of your relationship, because your woman is noticing the nervous system, the energy that you're pulsating on a day-to-day basis is progressing. He's more present. He's more loving. What the hell is going on? She doesn't have to rationally understand it. She'll feel it. And your life gets easier. Her life gets easier. And the next 7 generations afterwards, their lives become easier because they've had a badass like you that started leading the way and lighting the way for all those coming afterwards, which is in perfect alignment with the core reason why we do what we do here in this Be the Husband She Brags About movement. Better husbands today, better world tomorrow. Go have an amazingly beautiful, generous, kingly day. And before you go, Kingly Brothers, I'm so happy to let you know that Heroic Husbands Men's Circles waiting list is now live. Online meetings supporting you up level to hero husband status. Go from fearing your best will never be good enough to becoming the competent and confident husband she brags about. Save years of needless guesswork and confidence eroding disconnection. Click on the link in the podcast description to take your first simple step to becoming the marriage-transforming hero of your relationship. Check it out now.